break out the gavel here. Well, I didn't even have to use it. Just say it. Just threaten. Okay. Welcome to our Ethics Commission meeting. Let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. So, yeah. First turn to Carla. Welcome back.
Thank you.
For our ethics thought.
Before we do that, may I make an administrative announcement?
Please.
I just wanted to make sure that the audience members had all of the handouts that were there. So there are two different sets of minutes. There's one from an executive session that we had, a shade meeting that we had on an anonymous complaint, and that is front and back. And then there's a second set of minutes for the general ethics commission meeting that followed that, and that is two pages, double-sided. So make sure you got both of those. And then there were three separate handouts for that relate to the vacancy that's forthcoming on the Ethics Commission. It's the application for the Ethics Commission. It's a list of places that we are considering advertising the position to, and it's a description of the recommended procedure and timeline for it. So just to clarify the handouts. Thank you.
From Immanuel Kant, without man and his potential for moral progress, the whole of reality would be a mere wilderness, a thing in vain, and have no final purpose.
See, this is what I think Carla thought about for a month in Tasmania.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. You did go to Derwent Valley or someplace like that, Huon Valley?
Tasmania.
In Tasmania.
All right. So as Kirby described, we've got two sets of minutes. Take a minute if you'd like to look through the minutes from our regular meeting. Comments on the minutes?
Thorough.
Indeed. All right, if anyone would like to make a motion, please do.
Second.
All right, all those in favor approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? All right, the minutes are approved.
I assume we need to do
that distinctly with the shade meeting minutes, too, which is not going to be much to review, but take a look. Someone's ready, feel free to make a motion.
I move that the minutes be accepted.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor of approving the shade meeting minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. Thanks. Okay, let's turn to a report from the ECHO office.
All right, so the update on the budget is good news, and you already know that Kirby had an increase in salary, which is commensurate with her qualifications, which was great. And the City Council also gave us funds for an executive assistant for the Ethics Commission. So minutes and emails and getting the group organized, is we're going to have help so Kirby can focus more on training and legal issues that are coming up. So that was very good news. And we did get the money from the independent authorities, just like it was planned. We talked about it last month. So budget, good shape. And the resolution on moving the Inspector General's office to City Hall was withdrawn by the sponsor, Councilmember Crescenbeny. So that's a moot point. And we're going to have a report from Ioana about the IG selection so she can fill you in on that. And just a general announcement that there's two conferences that I've been asked to speak at, and I'm excited. It's going to be in December. One is at the Harvard Graduate School of Education on citizen participation in government, so I'll be speaking on that. And Kirby is going to be coming up with me to Boston for that conference. And the next one I just found out about is I've been asked to moderate a panel on transparency in cities for Transparency International with the United Nations. So that's going to be very exciting in December in Panama. Yeah. So I'll have to work very hard in November, get prepared for both of those. Anyhow, that's my report.
Good. So let me just say, you know, I look at our agenda. Almost everything we have on this is procedural tonight, not anything, you know, significant controversial substance. And, you know, and even though that may make our work right here a bit light, it's a good thing. You know, you mentioned the increase in budget for increased training and the things that particularly you can do through the ECHO office and reaching out to, you know, the other entities of government. That's great, you know. And so, it's sometimes it seems to me a little counterintuitive because it's nice to hash out some, you know, good policy, you know, here at our commission meetings, but it's a real healthy thing for out training in an environment where we're, you know, not seeing anything like that over a few months. Thanks for your work, because that's not work that we often get to see.
And thank you. And that reminds me of something I just wanted to share with everybody. On the plane back, you have to really worry about who's going to sit next to you for a 15-hour flight. And I saw this kind of eccentric person sitting in the group before we boarded the plane. There's like 400 people on this plane. And I see this eccentric person, and she has like Occupy Mars on her T-shirt, and she's knitting. And I thought, oh, she looks a little interesting. And sure enough, you know, she is my partner for the 15 hours. She sits next to me, and we have three seats, empty one in between us, which is a godsend on a 15-hour flight. And it turns out she's getting her doctorate in education. And she's up in New Hampshire, and she works for Moodle, which is the preeminent open source software system for online education. And so we talked for hours about online education, and she has really developed criteria for how do you educate people and how do you train it, because it is her life and she's writing her dissertation on it. And so we got into a whole discussion on what we're trying to do in Jacksonville with training, and the model that she was talking about of really kind of working with all of our elected officials and really kind of building a consensus and working with people instead of an us versus them, like, hey, we're just sitting around to find that you did something wrong so that we can charge you, you know, and fine you. We have a different attitude, and it's coming from a different educational theory. And so she gave me all these books to read, and we're now we're friends and going to stay in touch. And so what you're talking about with training and how we're trying to shift the culture where we're actually working with our officials and all the employees to really get them to feel comfortable talking with us and to think and really be willing to communicate is, I think it's an exciting approach, a different one. And I just happened to sit next to this person for 15 hours. And not only did we talk about that, but she taught me how to crochet. And so I was sitting there crocheting while we were talking about this stuff. Anyhow, so I want to thank you. And, you know, we'll continue. Kirby and I are really enthused about our training plans for the next year. And now that we have more help, we'll be able to get out there and even do more. I didn't ask her about her T-shirt. I mean, she was such an interesting person, Occupy Mars, and I thought, oh, wow, you must be from New Hampshire or some liberal state. Yeah, and let me guess, you're not voting for Trump. So anyhow, it was a relief if you're going to spend 15 hours to have someone like that. Anyhow.
All right. General Counsel's Office update.
No report, thank you.
Thanks. Okay, let's just go through the subcommittees. If you've got an update, you know, please give it. Complaints, anything?
No, complaints received by the complaints committee, so nothing to report this board.
All right. Internal operations?
No, we'd planned a meeting before this meeting, but we didn't have a quorum, so we called it off before it happened.
Okay. Legislation?
Kirby and I actually did have a meeting with Peggy Sibley, and we're ready to...
we're ready to hold a legislative subcommittee meeting in order to address some concern that was raised regarding the opportunity to speak at council meetings, the time constraints, as well as the address, name and address presentation. So that's something that we're going to be doing in the very near future, and we're making progress towards getting a consensus on how to present it to the entire
nation. Excellent. Okay, good. And if you have a situation where you don't have, you can't get a quorum on a day you need to have it, you know, let me know. Open government, anything?
Nothing to report. We didn't meet.
All right. Let's go to unfinished business. So we had talked about a nominating committee at our last meeting. We need to appoint that. Ms. Miller, do you mind giving us a little bit on the process?
I'll have Kirby give you a little bit of information on the process and tell you that as far as chair and vice chair, we have indications of interest for chair from Yawana Allen and vice chair from Brian All. But that does not mean that other people cannot volunteer, although those of you who are leaving us cannot, obviously. And also, just so that everyone knows, Richard will be leaving us at the end of the year, chief judge's appointment, and we're very sad to see him go. He has some professional commitments that are, like, pulling him. I can't believe he'd want to earn money instead of just volunteering. Yeah, we will really miss Richard. He's done great work on the commission. So the chief judge has already been in communication with me about picking a replacement, if that can be found, for Richard. But so we'll have, like, an interesting turnover in the next couple of months.
Okay, go ahead, Kirby.
So in your books, you'll find a handout for the procedure and proposed schedule for the nomination of officers and the forthcoming vacancies on the Ethics Commission. The internal operating procedures of the commission currently provide that the internal operations committee would be serve as the nominating committee, but that's not the process we followed last year. Last year, we actually convened a nominating committee that Dr. Candler chaired, and it had, I think, Yawana was a member and Richard Brown, three members, and then Tom Paul also participated in the process and interviewing people. So if we're interested in utilizing the same process and procedure as last year, then I would recommend that you have a waiver of that provision requiring the internal ops committee to do it and just select the nominating committee in its stead. And then there's also a provision in the internal operating procedures that the selection and application for the new member would be completed prior to the November meeting, and I'm not certain we're going to make that timeline, so you might consider waiving that as well. I talked to Joe about scheduling the November Ethics Commission meeting towards the middle part of that to allow about 3 weeks for us to to advertise the vacancy coming up on the Ethics Commission and then give a week or two for interviews and then have scheduled the meeting. So that'll push us into November, not prior to November. So the process that we did last year in terms of the selection of officers, we only had one person put in for each of the positions for chair and for vice chair. Both Joe and Tom agreed to serve in those capacities. So the Ethics Commission themselves took that up as the slate and voted on it. There was no need to send it to the nominating committee. But in terms of the vacancy that Mr. Rybeck now fills, we advertised for that position to numerous places in the community. We got, I believe, 9 or 10 applications in. The nominating committee met and they interviewed all the people at the same time, and then they recommended 3 potential applicants to the commission for consideration, one of whom was Mr. Salem. And those top 3 candidates came and they spoke to the Ethics Commission in November, and then the commission picked their nominee from that slate of candidates recommended by the nominating commission.
So let if I can, just go over a couple of facts so that we know it. So in terms of the internal operating committee, that's your committee, who are the members on that?
So it's me and Dave Ryback and George.
That's our kind of default team right now, and we certainly can open it up, and you know, we can have as many people on this nominating committee as want to be on it. So I think that's we've got at least three, and one of the three of you want to bow out. I think we can do that obviously as well, but probably at least three. And then in terms of those that are appointed by the committee, it's only Tom's position, right?
There's actually two positions.
Two. Okay.
Right. And this is also in that procedure. But so we have four positions that are coming available, two of which belong to the Ethics Commission. Ioana sits in one of those seats. Her first term expires at the end of this year. So she's eligible for reappointment by the commission or to go through the committee process if you so choose. And then the other position would be the last term, the last year on Tom's term, since he's resigning a year early.
Okay, so under our rules, the seat that Ioana holds, is that open for all nominations to come in, or does the committee first decide whether we would want to reappoint her? First make that decision?
Okay. I don't have the rules right in front of me, but I know that the rules provide leeway in terms of how you fill that position. And in the past, there has been I wouldn't say a policy, but there have been times in the past where the committee has opted, the Ethics Commission themselves as a whole has opted not to put the reappointment through the nominating process and voted as a whole to retain that person if they expressed interest in being reappointed.
Okay, got it.
Usually if they do a really good job, they just get nominated right away.
Okay, and then
oral motion to reappoint Ioana for a second term, or is that not appropriate for today?
I think we can do that today. So we're
take the cue here.
Yes,
you're listening.
So let me nail down one more fact, and that is an excellent thought. And so the last fact is just in terms of timing, which is, we want to make sure that for any vacancies we so that we can advertise and get people in. And so as Kirby referenced, I think what we'll shoot for is, a November meeting that can work in our schedules so that we don't have to then have a December meeting. If we can't find a November meeting, we'll have a December meeting because we certainly want to make some decisions on this vacancy by the end of the year. So as part of the motion we need to make, we need to extend the deadline past the end of October, but I don't think we need to set a date right now. We'll just extend it to the end of the year. We can do that, and we'll find a date that works for the commission to meet and deal with that. Okay, so let's first do these logistical things if someone's willing to make a motion, and then we'll go on to Mr. Salem's. So first would be that we, I guess we need to have a discussion really on who wants to be a part of the nominations committee. So
I have an idea. I don't know if it's even possible, but instead of having a nominating commission that meets and then provides names to the entire commission, why not just have the entire commission do it at the meeting in November, or is that too streamlined?
Well, I think the concern would be what the pool of applicants is. So last time we had the committee select the top three, and then they came in interviewed with the commission, as opposed to all nine or 12.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just spitballing an idea to kind of save time because it may be difficult to I don't know. I'm just for schedule, it may be more difficult to have two meetings versus just one meeting. But I get your point of time constraints of having 15 people apply and you have a 2-hour meeting.
Yeah, so it would be, and I mean, the other advantage of having the nominating committee is that those people will backgrounds and be able to advocate a little bit of why we selected this person, or they can say, look, we've got seven lawyers. It'd be nice to have someone with an education background, or why these people are in the top three or top four. Where if we just tried to do all that in one night, that may be a little hard to hash out in a similar night. So if we've got the people that are willing to do it, if we've got three nominations committee, I think that'd be the preference, and then we just have a commission meeting to talk about the recommended applicants. So right now, are there... Tom, I should let you lead this discussion since you will chair that committee.
I want to talk about that part because the idea was things I was going to do before I rolled off is have a clean transition over to Mr. Ryback from a strategic plan standpoint. And I don't know that we've got enough time between now and the end of the year to fully and appropriately do both of those things. I certainly don't want to, short shrift either of those. Those are both very important. But I'll do what we need to do.
Okay. Well, let's go for the volunteer method first then. So do we have three people that are willing to serve on a nominations committee?
If what you were saying, Tom, was that you didn't think you have the time to chair both of those processes, I'd be willing to volunteer to chair the search committee again.
Others that can serve on it?
I can help out. That's fine.
That'd be great. Okay. Excellent. Okay, great. So why don't we have a motion to name our new nominations committee and extend the timeline for that process to the end of the year. I think that covers what we need in the first section. So someone can move that.
Can I just say so moved?
Yeah.
I don't know. You're good at the motions. I like hearing the rewording.
Do you mind speaking into the mic, please? Thank you.
I move that we establish an ad hoc nominations committee this year to be chaired by Dr. Candler with Mr. Salem and Mr. John Hartley through the end of the year.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All right, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right, excellent. All right, Mr. Salem, let's move to your motion.
Motion to reappoint Ioana Allen to a second term.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
No.
I got to say, I have thoroughly enjoyed working with Ioana since I think our first day was the senior together. And I couldn't be more excited than to have her extended.
Thank you.
Okay.
Shall we read my page of grievances that I have?
Now would be the appropriate time.
Yeah. Okay. Then on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right. The motion's accepted.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Through the chair, if I may, there is in your notebook two different handouts related to the nominating procedure in the event you would like to review them. One is the application we used last year, and also the second is a list of community organizations and media outlets where we would advertise the position. So if you have any feedback on either one of those and you want to give it to me, that would be welcomed. Thank you.
Okay, and Kirby, just one last question. We don't need to authorize anything else for you to get that process started. We're good. Okay.
Right.
Excellent.
We're good. Thank you.
All right. We'll then move on to item number six, which is our new business. Turn back to Ms. Miller if you have any thoughts there on the process for handling anonymous complaints.
If you recall, that came up when we were handling the last case in a shade meeting, and there were some questions about how we would pursue handling anonymous complaints. And we can't discuss the general procedures when we're in a shade meeting because we're only exempt from Sunshine to discuss that specific case. So that's why it was bumped to this meeting. And I asked Kirby to take a look at the rules and bring us up to speed with our concerns are, like, when we get a slip of paper under my door, it doesn't have any name of who is submitting the complaint. What exactly is our process for doing that? And there was some question about what's the best way to proceed, and you've seen how it operates. We handled it fine, you know, the last time we handled that, but some of you had questions that we immediately said, don't talk in this shade meeting and bring it up now. So, Kirby, you want to add to that?
The only thing else that I would add is under the ethics code and in our complaint procedures, which, by the way, you have in your notebooks under the complaint tab if you wanted to look at them, in order for the Ethics Commission to consider a complaint, it must be in writing. So that leaves sort of a void as to what do we do when we get anonymous letters like we got in on the last one or anonymous telephone call on the hotline. How does the Ethics Commission receive those complaints if the code requires them to be in writing? And so the process that is now in the complaint procedures is that we can, as the ethics office, take that complaint in or receive that complaint and do some type of preliminary investigation and then present it either to the complaints committee or to the ethics commission as a whole to make a recommendation and determination as to whether or not the ethics commission itself wants to initiate the written complaint and fill out the form, essentially, but put it down to writing. So the question came up last time because it was in the form of an anonymous letter. How do we handle those? How do we notify the person that made the complaint about any action that we took on it? It's just very different. Did we even notify the person against whom the complaint was made? Because our complaint procedures require that complaints made in writing, those people get a copy of the complaint within a certain number of days. But there's no mechanism for that when there's anonymous complaints because they're not technically, quote, complaints underneath the ethics code or complaint procedures. Does that make sense?
Can I want to clarify something. So if they put it in writing and slip under your door, that's a complaint.
No, because in our definitions, a complaint has to be on our complaint form and it has to be notarized and the person has to put their name and their address, you know, so there's specific information to file a complaint with the commission. Someone just saying someone did something wrong and slipping it under it's in writing because it's been written, but it's not in our official complaint form with the required elements in it.
Okay, so if they do this, follow the proper procedure and the complaint form, that person is notified within a certain time frame.
Right.
Okay, so the question then is, what do you do when they don't follow those procedures? Do you or do you not notify the person? Because right now we don't until the Ethics Commission decides to initiate that complaint.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, you know, and what we did is after the last shade meeting and we determined that the person had filed their secondary employment form, so it was dismissed, if you recall. Then the next day I called the person. I said, oh, by the way, there was a complaint filed against you, but it was dismissed. And, you know, it turns out in talking to her that, you know, she really had filed it all along. And, you know, I felt pretty comfortable with what we had done. So the question is, do we want to tell someone, like, if you get a note under the door and it's anonymous, do you then have a duty to call that person and tell them that we're going to take a look at it to see if we want to self-initiate it? There's nothing they can do to participate at that point because we make that determination without – make the initial determination without consulting or letting that person speak. They get to speak at the probable cause hearing, but at the initial determination, they don't get to speak.
Yeah, and just to be clear, so the self-initiation is really the commission as a whole officially filing a complaint, and the rest of that process is exactly the same.
Right.
So we're talking about the lead up to that before it's considered official, not anything different once the process starts,
right.
if a complaint is fully initiated. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and I think the way, you know, I've just seen it handled over, you know, my time here is, you know, we've either had some dialogue at the commission level on what do we do next. You know, we've certainly taken input from Carl on that. You know, we've done everything from, hey, let's refer it over to the state attorney because it's more of a criminal issue. Referred it to this Florida Ethics Commission because it's really in their jurisdiction. You know, sometimes we've decided not to self-initiate and we've informed someone just because, you know, that's whether it's a courteous thing to do or it's a, you know, good policy thing to do so that they can ensure that they're following the city's ethics code. So we haven't had any bright lines because I think those things can take some different forms, and I think we've worked well with the flexibility on how to you know, make sure they're reviewed properly.
Well, and I would echo that every time we try to do the rules and anticipate all the situations that might come up, then the next one that comes in is different and it doesn't fit what we did. And so if we don't have flexibility for the ethics director to get with the chair of the commission and sort of say, okay, here's this one that came in. It doesn't quite fit our rules, but what do you think if we just present it to the whole commission in a shade meeting for the next meeting like we did for this one? And just instead of taking it to the complaint committee first, having them consider it and then having it go to a two-step process, we just shortcut it. So the more flexibility that the chair has with the director to figure out the process, most of them are going to seem pretty obvious, but if you try to fit them into the four corners of the rules that we've got, there are always quirks with that.
And let me say, because I think this could be a concern, that I can't recall a situation where there was a complaint that we didn't bring to the commission. So it wasn't like that we had dialogue on, let's not even bring this to the commission. They all come up to the commission some discussion and then send it off to where it is.
Right. Yeah, no, it's never been the chair and the ethics director saying, oh, this one doesn't look good enough, we're not going to get it to the commission. They all come to the commission. I guess what we've done is decided whether or not we shortcut it and just have it all in one meeting with the whole commission or whether we divide it up. If it's complicated enough and there's a lot of investigation stuff that needs to go on, then it's better to go to a committee. If it's really clear-cut like the last one, you don't want to have a two-step procedure. You want to just get it right in. But, yeah, so, but you, any complaint that comes in that has anything to do with ethics or Chapter 602, you guys see it.
Yeah. You want the opportunity to self-initiate.
Right. I don't know if there's really I don't see any big thing that we need to do to revise the rules. I just think we needed some of the newer people needed to talk about it a little bit more, and we couldn't talk about it in the shade meeting. So does anybody have any leftover questions or something that were muzzled in the last shade meeting because we can't discuss those in the shade meeting? Any
question? Yeah, because I think my last question was about why it didn't go to the hotline subcommittee, and so what did you and Kirby discuss about that as far as the procedure there? I mean, when and if they go through the hotlines subcommittee. I mean, is there still a hotline subcommittee?
There is, yeah. Okay. So that's what we have discussed in the past, and if we feel like there either needs to be a significant investigation more than just, Carl and Kirby always do some due diligence so that when it comes to us, we have some context on discussing
that last complaint did not go through the hotline.
No, I understand.
So that's what I was.
Yeah.
That's what I was curious about. Okay.
Right. So to answer that question, so that decision is made between the chair and the executive director.
Gotcha. Okay.
On whether to go to the hotline committee or straight to the commission. The factors in making that decision are whether it needs significant investigation or significant deliberation. Okay. If we feel like both of those, or one of those two is the case, then we go to the hotline committee. If not, it goes to the full ethics commission. But just to be clear, they all go. I mean, they all either go to the committee or to the commission. It's not a situation where the chair and the executive director go, oh, we don't have to deal with this one.
Let's dismiss it. Yeah. But I would think maybe there is room for amending our rules just to say that there's discretion between the chair and the ethics director to either bring it to the complaint committee first at the dual step or the single step and shortcut it if it seems. We don't have that there's discretion to do that. That's how we've been doing it. Just eventually it comes to the whole commission anyhow to approve of it. So we just eliminate the first meeting. And, you know, we don't get that many complaints, so it's not that hard to for the ones that we get to just handle them all in one fell swoop if it seems obvious. But I don't think we have anything in our rules. So there isn't anything in our rules that say that we can do that. So maybe, you know, if you want to have that clarified, you could have a motion to amend the rules. And Kirby and I will find the right place to put it in there. But to amend the rules that the chair and the ethics director can decide whether it's a one-step process or a two-step process. You know, and that actually gives us that particular jurisdiction to do it and have the flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, it depends whether someone feels like that's necessary or...
We've been doing it that way anyhow. There's nothing in the rules that says we can't do it. There's nothing in the rules.
I think as long as you bring in everything to the commission, that those decisions and those discussions can be had as it comes to the commission, how it started, where it went, and then how did you handle it between the chair and the director. So each and every time we'll review this, I would assume.
And certainly the commission can say, hey, this one needs a further look. Let's send it back down to the hotline committee. Mm-hmm. So it's permanent
that's
bypass.
True. That's true.
Yeah. And certainly I would, maybe my slight hesitation in adopting a rule would be if I was the chair of the hotline committee and I saw this and I felt like the committee needed to see it, and I didn't want to be able to say that, you know, and say, let's send it back down. So I think operating in the context we have gives everyone the best voice on these
Can you hear me? Okay. Based upon the frequency and the types of complaints that we've been receiving, I would say maybe over the past year, do you think that we may need to do some type of refresh communication with city employees about, like, the process at all? Like, do you feel like they are knowledgeable enough about how the complaints should come if they come, or do they know all of the options that are available to them? And it seems like, I could be wrong, but I thought that we did this at one point, like there was something that went out to all of them.
Alan Pickard's bookmarks.
Yes, the bookmarks. Oh, that's yes. What it was. They were on neon paper, right? Yes. So maybe, you know, just a refresher of some kind. I don't know. I'm just curious if you think that's something we need to do or if we're good the way that we are.
Reprint the bookmarks.
Yeah, we need to reprint those. I think we just got the departmental ethics officer system up and running again, and that group is, we're coalescing the group, we're getting them together, and they trickle down all that information. We incorporated it in our training. I never wanted to just have it be cut off and isolated, like, hey, listen, it got complaints. Here's the place where we want your complaints. You know, I would rather incorporate it into the whole training, the wholeness of the training, you know, so it doesn't stick out like we're out hunting for complaints. So we always mention that in all the trainings that we do, and we'll bring it up with, I think they know how to do it. I think people know how to do it. But we do have to keep bringing it up in training to remind people.
Okay.
And actually, we have that in the strategic planning goals because Ms. Miller's correct. And I think your initial comment or your question was around, well, we haven't heard a lot lately. What does that mean? Is that a good answer? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And I sense that your question was unsure of that, because you weren't sure whether that meant people know about how to call in and are comfortable that there aren't any issues. The other thing that you didn't specifically address that should be considered and is in the plan goals is determining whether there's both awareness and comfort in speaking up, comfort in raising issues with someone's name out there, because the potential for retaliation often causes people not to to say things where they otherwise would. So that's part of the goals is to really figure that out, figure out how best to do that in this type of environment, because absent more information, a certain number of calls doesn't mean anything. It doesn't give you comfort. The only change that I would want to be sure that you're thinking about is having a separate inspector general's office, that there's another venue for other types of complaints that are much, I would think, much more frequent than matters of an ethical violation. And so with that up and running, we've got another place, a more appropriate place for those types of calls to come. So a lower number of calls might be indicative of some of those going to the appropriate place.
Yeah, and I would say that just answer your question a little bit in more detail is, since I've monitored these cases for about 10 years, what I've seen is a lot of the stuff that we used to get in the beginning was fraud, waste, and abuse. It's an inspector general type thing. And we'd be discussing it with the Ethics Commission sort of on thin ice, like what jurisdiction do we have to go into fraud, waste, and abuse? Well, I guess they're just generally unethical. You know, it's a little, yeah. And so splitting off those cases was one big thing. And then what I've noticed is a huge flip. In the beginning, people were coming and reporting things and filing complaints 3 months, 4 months after something had happened. Now we have every day, all day long, Kirby and I are answering questions of people ahead of time because we've laid in the culture that you don't travel, you don't take things, you don't go to football games, you don't do anything without checking with the ethics office first. So what that's done is created 10 times more work on the front-end advice, and we're not getting the complaints like we used to that look what happened 3-4 months ago, which is good. And it actually, and I know Tom can back this up, that in corporate America, that shift is a positive one in the culture when you get it at the front end instead of the back end. So I think all those factors have played into it, and they indicate success really of how we're moving with the culture. But it doesn't mean we have to take it for granted or that we don't still continue to get that word out all the time. It's a constant thing to remind people.
All right, good. Well, Yuan, if we can turn to you for an update on the Inspector General.
Sure. Breaking stuff. Okay, so as I'm sure you've all seen in the media, there have been quite a few things that have happened with regard to this election. The initial meeting was held on the 8th, where we had an opportunity to basically share our feedback about the candidates. Kirby was kind enough to print this stack for me, and I came in about 2 hours early and aside from the ones that I'd looked at home, just kind of went through all of them, made notes, and kind of identified, like, my top 7 recommendations based upon what I thought we were looking for. And then, of course, proceeded to the meeting. Some of the concerns and things that I think that came out, there was initial concern about the qualifications of the first wave of applicants. And so for whatever reason, the pool seemed to improve significantly in the final hour. So there were a total of 27 that applied. About 8 didn't meet the requirements altogether. And then there was one that withdrew and one that was non-responsive. So that gave us about 22 to consider, some in town, some out of town. I want to share some of the public comment that happened, and I want to acknowledge Mr. Markle as well as Mr. Nooney, because this topic is just really, really interesting, I think, in terms of how people feel about it. And there were quite a few members of the public that were there that day. when discussing the location of the office and just sharing public comment, Mr. Nooney stated that he believed the IG office should be in the Yates Building. He also talked a lot about public trust, which we've heard him speak about before, in our community, and the fact that it's crushed, that this is a huge decision that will be making, and that he wanted the committee to be mindful that we need to be open to going outside the box. Mr. Markle shared that he believes there needs to be someone outside of the sphere of influence, and that comment came from the fact that there were several local candidates that were being considered. So that the candidate should not be tempted to hire someone locally. It's a pitfall that saves money, but ultimately could cost money in the long run. So once we identified the top five, and I'll say that the top five were all included in my top seven, which I was very happy about, that everybody was kind of on the same page. Then we determined the next opportunity that we would have for the actual interviews, which was September 19th, and basically we were in this room all day long. But it ended up going very well with regard to the pool. The committee chose Mr. Hoffman, who is a JAG attorney in the military, pretty extensive, no IG experience, but that was pretty much his background. We also interviewed Lisa Green, who currently works in the IG's office, Scott Ando out of Chicago, Maxine Pearson, and there was a Mr. Carrasquillo, who was from New York. I guess it's safe for me to say this since it's all public record now. So my first pick was Maxine Pearson. The committee shared that they felt like her personality and charisma wasn't necessarily what they thought we should have in terms of being able to build relationships in the community. But she's had a really successful career, not only in working for the sheriff's office, but currently with the housing authority. I felt like she nailed it. She was my number one pick. Amazingly, the other two gentlemen were like my second and third choices. As you've seen in the media, Mr. Hoffman declined the initial offer because he's in the military and he's not going to be able to meet the start date by the first of the year. And then, of course, Mr. Ando was extended the opportunity. When we met as a committee that day, we determined that we would have a first choice and an alternate just in case the first pick didn't accept. So that is what happened. I just received an email today and a call from Kirby to let me know the email had been sent. Now we have to come back together again to determine what is going to happen. And so we do that on the 14th. I can just share with you my recommendation is that we go to Ms. Pearson because she was the next person who had the highest number of points. There was a gentleman out of town, a Mr. Holmgren, that we had originally identified who declined to be interviewed. He apparently sent an email to Mr. Crescenbini indicating that he feels like he's the right person for this job, but he was unable to travel because his wife had surgery. And I think that's very admirable. However, I do believe that maybe that information should have been shared on the front end. And then secondly, I'm not going to push for that because at this point, he knows all the questions that were asked. I mean, it's all public information. And so I feel like we would have to totally go back and revisit the whole process altogether. So my recommendation is going to be that we consider Ms. Pearson if, in fact, she is still interested. I believe that she was the strongest out of all the candidates.
So I've got a question, because when I read this in the newspaper, was there any consideration of extending that January 1st date so that your number one pick could accept the job?
From what I understand, there was no additional conversation at that time. One of the concerns is that Mr. Rohan, you know, he's currently working in the interim role and has already, you know, expressed he is retired. So this was clearly not supposed to be a long-term kind of thing, although he's willing to kind of stay and help. But even in that role, he's going to, you know, be scaling back in terms of a little bit of time, but he's still committed to helping. So that was one of the key factors with regard to having someone in position. And then also, I think, to Mr. Crescenbini's point, he was very adamant about this, and I feel like he was absolutely on point with regard to what he said, it just doesn't look really good, you know, that, we've had the challenge already that we've had with regard to Mr. Klein, and then now, you know, the longer we go without having someone in place, the more dire the impact could be. So, any other questions or concerns?
I just had a comment when you were talking. It reminded me of something I wanted to tell the commission. You know, the space issue. Where does the IG live? Are they in the Yates building a few blocks away? Or are they on the second floor up here with the ethics office and city council auditor's office?
Want me to share what the candidate said? Or
well, no, I think the candidate's pretty much, and you can share that. I just wanted to tell everybody that I wanted to thank Kirby for a 4-page memo she did on this, on contacting IG offices all over the state and all over the country. And the bottom line of that memo, and we'll send it to you, it's really well done, is that there's a division of opinion on it, like most things. And there's IGs that think it's great to be right in the thick of things, and there's a lot of state offices that operate that way. And then there's some that say, are you kidding me? We have to be in a separate building. And so everybody has an opinion on it. But the really overriding concept that I think is key is, and Council Member Bill Gulliford had this discussion. He said, you know, it's not really where they are. It's the quality of the leader that you've got in that position, because you could put that person anywhere, and if they're a leader and they work well with other people, they're going to go and make those connections, and they're going to integrate well. And it doesn't really matter, like, where their desk is. And I think that that's probably a key point. And, you know, so anyhow, I'll send you Kirby's background memo on it, because I thought it was really insightful that there really is no right way to do it. It's just a matter of style.
That was actually one of the interview questions. I forget how many questions they were, but basically we split them up. So we each had an assigned question each time a candidate came. And that question was one, you know, where do you think the office should be? The majority of them did express that they felt like it should be separate, that it should not be like in City Hall. But we did have one candidate, to Ms. Miller's point, and he was like, it really doesn't matter. As long as the work gets done, I can make it happen regardless of the location. So, but there were some concerns about comfort and visibility, just in terms of, you know, people seeing you enter this space or what have you. So that was one of the questions.
Again, was the detailed background of Ms. Person? Did you say she worked for the JSO in the Housing Authority?
She's currently the CFO, I think, for the Jacksonville Housing Authority. And but her experience was just, I mean, stellar. Like, I didn't. And one of the things that concerned me was, even with Mr. Ando and Mr. Hoffman, neither of them have IG experience. And so one of the considerations that the committee was willing to afford was, you know, incentive, basically, for them to go ahead and secure those things. So we had quite a bit of discussion about even what they were asking in terms of salary. And I'll just say, you know, my position is, if you don't have that certification, you definitely shouldn't be coming in at the high end of the scale. Like, that just didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. And so pretty much what we did was we looked at what they asked for, and we basically gave them offerings in terms of salary, $10,000 less than that. And with the assurance that the salaries would be increased to what they actually asked for after they received the certification, is how we presented it. So I was trying to find her resume in my huge stack.
Have the certification?
But she was just really sharp. I feel like her experience, even out of all of them, was the most impressive. And I didn't get the impression that she was like some warm and fuzzy person. But then again, I don't think she needs to be. Like, you know, if I had to choose between someone who was highly knowledgeable and skilled as opposed to somebody who has a lot of charisma, who may have us in the media in another 12 months because we're looking for another candidate. Oh, yeah, they had a great personality, but, you know, they couldn't get the job done. So, but she was fantastic. I mean, she was very – I should have gotten the sheets from that actual notebook so that I could give you some other specifics, but, yeah.
I believe she's a certified fraud examiner.
Yes. That's true. I remember that. Oh, here it is. Okay, so she holds an MBA from UNF. She's a certified public accountant in the state of Florida, certified fraud examiner. She's currently the chief financial officer and finance director for the Housing Authority. She's been there since 2014. She manages an $84 million budget. Her work at the sheriff's office, she was the chief for budget and management, that division, the principal internal auditor, responsible for the continuous improvement unit. I just thought she rocked. I mean, I really did. I felt like she nailed it more than anyone else. So, again, the meeting is next Friday at 1, and I actually have another commitment during that time, but I'm literally going to come and say what I have to say, and then I'm going to have to go because the other thing was scheduled for, like, 3 months, and I can't get out of it completely. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I missed this. What was the problem with the doctor in Chicago?
Okay. Yes, sir. So, Mr. Ando, very nice, it appeared. His background was with the Chicago PD. One of the things that we didn't know during the time that we interviewed him, he touched on it a little bit during the actual interview before the committee, but we hadn't, like, had a full-blown kind of presentation. But apparently, he had a position with the Chicago Police Department and resigned from that position because of a lot of the controversy surrounding police-involved shootings and his leadership and management in terms of that. His concern, apparently, was that the budget for the office was very small. At least that's what he told the media. When we had our committee discussion, there were two things that we talked about. And ironically, I think it was Carrie Stewart who brought that up, that she thought that might be a concern because he's used to managing such a large budget. And the budget, of course, you know, for this role isn't extremely large. And then there was also concern or question about his ability to kind of connect with the area. He expressed that he has friends here and, you know, that kind of thing. But even again, with the discussion about, you know, should the person be local, should they not be local, you know, I feel like somebody maybe who is local could be more vested because they really love Jacksonville. Like they've, you know, they have a history or they've proven, you know, that they have a vested interest. So yeah. Did I answer your question? Okay. Any other questions?
You want to? When do you have to leave the meeting? At if it starts at 1?
I'm probably gonna only be able to be there for about an hour. I need to. It's a commitment for one of my clients, so I'm actually in communication with them to see if they'll let me bump that up. And it's right at the nonprofit center, so I can get here very quickly. I've already thought about that in my mind, like how I'm gonna work that out logistically. But in the event that I can't, I probably will only be able to be there for an hour.
The meeting not last longer than that.
Yeah.
They're not interviewing anybody. So
yeah.
It might be okay.
Okay. Any other questions from my fellow commissioners about this process? I will say it's been very interesting, like extremely interesting. And I was literally sitting over there and I should have followed, like, you know, that gut feeling that you have, because I started to recommend that we approach the third highest ranked candidate at that time, but I said nothing. In hindsight, I will not do that anymore. But I do believe that I felt like she was so phenomenal. And no offense to the other gentleman, but or lady.
Excellent. Thank you for all your service on that.
Sure. You're welcome. Anything that the chair asks me to do, I am more than happy to honor that request.
He's setting you guys up for next year. All right. Any update on the holiday gathering?
Yes. We are all set for December 12th. We'll do basically follow the same, Monday, December 12th. At 6, and so we'll have an opportunity to kind of network and gather for about 30 minutes with dinner starting at 6:30. I met with Danielle, who helped us orchestrate our plans last year. I met with her on Friday. She's really excited that we're coming back, as well as Jason, the managing partner, and John, the owner. I have some treats for you guys that you're going to get. Let's see what else. So I sent Kirby. Did it go out already? I can't remember. Okay, so Kirby is going to be sending to the committee information on making your menu selections for yourself and any guests that you may have. And then you'll have until, I think, November 28th to get actually that the 25th maybe to get those to her so that we can forward the information to the restaurant with the 2-week kind of window. So, yeah, we'll be in the same space.
Yeah, it's great. That's great.
Good.
Okay, hey, before we move to a public comment, let's if we can, go ahead and nail down our next meeting since we'll have to look at our calendars. I think, Kirby, you can tell me what the best timing is. I'm just going to throw out some dates. November 14th is a Monday. Is that too early?
No, that was one of the Mondays that I thought we could do.
So we've got the 14th, which is a Monday. I mean, we can look at a non-Monday, but I that starts getting into other people's obligations. You know, I know that's more difficult. The next Monday is the 21st. That's before Thanksgiving, but we're getting a never good on that. Okay. And then we've got December 5th, which I think is workable, but people also start having some holiday obligations.
Carla may have a traveling conflict with that date.
Yeah, I'll be in Panama for the transparency conference.
Okay, so if the 14th is good your end,
mm-hmm.
then how does that look for people's schedules?
That's good.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, great.
Great, and we'll work to have an agenda that focuses solely, if we can, on this issue, on the selection, because we'll have candidates in and we'll need to interview them, and it'll take some time to kind of work through that process. So.
Running any major?
All right. Do we have any public comment? Come on down. Thank you.
Well, hello. My name is John Nooney, 8356 Bascom Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32216. When you were talking about public comment, I was running here, so I just don't have my glasses. On your agenda, you have public comment right here. So, you just approved the minutes, and, here's the minutes, in attendance. But you go to the back, and public comment's off. There is? Okay, well, then I apologize, and I'll have to look at it. All right. Okay, well.
Let me thank you and Mr. Markle for bringing that to our attention. So we've responded. We agree that it's important to note those.
And page
okay.
3 has Mr. Markle's comments, and page 4 has your comments.
Okay. Well, also, I was going to, still intend, to file this an ethics complaint because, I shared with you, with what happened with the Waterways Commission meeting, but not to, go over that again. What I'd like to do is, just move forward, with the Inspector General selection. It is important that the office be in the Yates building. I wasn't there for the entire interview process, but the one candidate that Natafil Carraquillo, who interviewed second, he wants the job. You know, he's available. And, you know, he's outside of Jacksonville. And that is probably the most important thing you can hope for. You'd be amazed, you know, and to cite various examples. Now, the other lady, you know, that's here locally, you know, she cited two cases. You know, one, I want to say it was, you know, there was a procurement issue that had to do with the food. Another one had to do, you know, because they were asking examples. You know, okay, so you uncovered something. So what happened? You know, another had to do, I think, with, was it file cabinets or something like that. So what happened? You know? And the reason I mentioned the procurement, you know, I'm going to do something where, and hopefully this ethics commission will get behind me, because, you know, I want to throw my hat into the ring and, you know, and do something with the waterway project that's going to be requiring the removal of some pilings. I don't know how many thousands of dollars that's going to be involved with that. But you know what? I'm going to, and I haven't done it yet, and I really want to give you the heads up. You know, because, you know, when you were talking about the water, this is federal stuff, federal, you know, with this money. This is our taxpayer money. And so when we're talking about procurement, you know, I really have some real issues with that. So anyway, you know, that was an example, you know, for your IG selection, which is local, which I would hope that you don't do that. And at the very least, I would like to read in the paper that, you know, that someone reached out to that second person that was interviewed, because, man, he, you know, I'm sitting next to Dave Chapman and I'm going, man, this guy just sounds like he'd rock. I mean, isn't that what we want?
Thank you, Mr. Nini.
Well, thank you for listening.
Any other public comment? All right.
Conrad Markle, Concerned Taxpayers of Duval County. I just wanted to insert a little bit about the IG selection. I was there that last session for 11 and a half hours all the way to the end of it. It was a very long day. I brought up a question that I couldn't believe the reaction I got. I know Mr. Jaquat has been in the service, been in the military. I don't know who else may have been, but Mr. Hoffman had an excellent attitude and an excellent desire, because he really bowled up myself and Mr. Nooney and a few of us over with he volunteered the information that he thought the foremost thing to address in, starting out was making a connection with the public and the public trust. And we just, you know, it's like the thing that everybody else immediately goes to, connections with the administration, et cetera, et cetera. This is what is really needed in this person who is finally selected for this position, so that the ordinary citizen, taxpayer, and property owner can finally have someone who can penetrate and permeate what I've always termed the diamond hard layer of upper level bureaucracy that's encountered in this city government. But my question that I raised was, he was vague about when he would be available, and I got up and I said, because he had left, I said, does anybody know, is he a uniformed Navy officer, or is he a GS attorney that could be in the same capacity? And I got a titter around the review board to seem to think that was a silly question. And it's very important, because anybody who served in the military knows that's why he was being vague about how soon he could leave. You don't just quit the military. I mean, an officer has one up on the enlisted because he has the option of asking for a retirement. But then, as we all know who have served, the needs of the military come first, and they don't mind hitting you right in the face with it, you know, when you might have other ideas. If they have something else they need you to do, you're probably going to leave under less than favorable circumstances, which doesn't do you any good at all. But I just thought that was an important factor. And I still, throughout everything Mr. Chapman has written in the Daily Record and so on, I still have yet to see whether or not he holds a military rank or not. They just have completely circumvented that. And I would think it would be extremely important. And they had the other two or three people. Mr. Ando had other problems, one of which is more than just resigning in Chicago. Rahm Emanuel, the very controversial mayor up there who left the White House for the same reasons, asked for his job, but he had a very unenviable position from what it's described. He's got 37 years as a top cop, is the best way to describe it. He was with DEA for years, and he was hired in Chicago because they're having a real problem with what would allegedly be called rogue cops, and he was hired to sort out who is really a problem and, you know, try and get a realistic perspective on this. But he's trying to deal with like 2,000 people that have got allegations against them, and you've got the mayor on him because he's not making political fodder properly for him. So, but I just really think, I thought, gee, it sounds like somebody, Mike Williams, could really make some good use of him, you know. He wants to get out of Chicago, and I really have to suspect it's probably because he probably feels like there's a bounty on him if he stays there much longer with the people he's messing with, you know. But this guy Holmgren that could not make the interview that day, I talked to Mr. Kress and Benny last week, and he was telling me that, and she, Ioana was saying the same thing. He has gotten back in contact with him. He had a medical emergency that morning. He had to fly from Texas, and that was why he, what?
4 minutes. I'm giving the notices the time because it's 3 minutes for public comment. I gave 3 minutes to 4 minutes.
Appreciate your comments, Mr. Markle. And good that we have a member of the IG Selection Commission to hear that. So I appreciate both of you speaking.
Mr. Chair, may I share one quick thing before we leave? I just wanted to, because Mr. Nooney mentioned Mr. Carrasquillo, which, of course, I know that the committee is not aware of. But one of the concerns that we had about him in our discussion was that he's had 4 positions in various parts of the country since 2011. And so that was one of the items of discussion that came up. In his defense, he did share that he had some family stuff going on. He did share that there were some concerns his wife had about the locations that they were living. But I will say that was a red flag for us. You know, one was the IG position in Albuquerque, New Mexico for 2 years. There was an associate commissioner position for the Texas Department of Insurance for 1 year. There was an insurance company for 1 year, and then the current role that he has in New York, he's had that since 2015. So I just wanted to make sure that it was noted that we too thought that he was pretty impressive, but we were very concerned about that, considering especially our recent experience, that we didn't, again, want to have another situation where it's 12 months and we're looking for another candidate.
All right. With that, our meeting's adjourned. Thanks. Thank you.